You've just joined the Prepper Broadcasting Network, where we promote self-reliance and independence. The views and opinions expressed are strictly those of the host or their guests. Visit us in the interactive chat room at PrepperBroadcasting.com.
This message is transmitted at the request of the United States Office of Civil Defense.
Message follows. Tango 6-3 Delta Yankee
6-4-15-55.
Yeah, I got a message.
Crew now, we're at the IP. Bomb line checklist. Pilot center the OCI and keep it centered.
Roger, centering SCI.
Roger, 10 seconds to go.
Radio Österreich International.
Well, good evening, and welcome to All Hazards Communications Preparedness. I'm your host, David Vine, and I've got a great show planned for you tonight. This is not about radios tonight. This is about communication, human communication, because no matter what means you use, whether it's radio, teletype, telegraph, telephone, cell phone, chat, no matter what medium or mechanism you use, getting your point across to other people is really the name of the game. That's what you're trying to do. And there's just so many facets of this. You know, we're going to touch on a little bit of it, but obviously, you could go to college and get a degree, a four-year degree, in one aspect of communication. So, you know, how do we get a handle on this? Well, go to the description, which I put out, and that is solving human communications problems. So that's a pretty big task for me to tackle that. And the reason why I chose this topic was last week I was on the phone with an engineer friend of mine, who I really want to get on the program, by the way, and he and I were comparing notes about how we communicate with each other. Now, I was ready to blame Google because he had sent me some rather detailed replies to my emails. And just because I didn't have the settings right in Gmail, you know, the account settings, somehow or other, I wasn't seeing a reply if he had sent me a more recent message. In other words, it would sort of underneath the more recent message. And I think Google calls this conversations. Well, you can't really have a conversation if you can't see what the person said the last time. So I think I fixed that. And there were some other things we talked about. In fact, in a way, we kind of bared our souls, you know, in terms of the way we communicate with each other and with people in general. And it made a big impression on me, obviously, because here I am, almost a week later, talking about solving human communications problems. So it really was kind of a revelation. Now, I deal with this every single day. You know, my wife and I have a sort of a running low-intensity conflict going on. And that is that she thinks that I don't give her enough detail when I'm talking about something. And unfortunately, one of the things that I tend to do is, well, in a sense, think out loud. Well, that is infuriating to her, because if I start a sentence where I haven't really introduced what I'm talking about, and I just start verbalizing something I'm thinking about, that is a big problem for her. And of course, it's a big problem for me. And it's sort of a reflected problem, or it becomes a problem. It becomes a barrier to communications. And so I'm working hard to solve that. And, you know, I'm a sort of an older guy, so I've had a lot of experience. And, you know, I kind of scratch my head and I think, have I gone through my whole life like this? Now, there were many years where I would stand up in front of a group of people, anywhere from 5 to 200, well, actually a couple of cases, 400 or 500 people. And I would attempt to communicate some very sophisticated information in the sense that it had to do with a particular set of tools, techniques, concepts, and methods. And that was, in a nutshell, it was called the Internet for Investigators Seminar, Workshop, Webinar, videos, etc., whatever medium I was using to get it across. Most of the time, at least for the first 15 years or so, it was a person-to-person exchange with a group of people. And it's really like being the host of a live TV show, except there are no cameras. And so there were a lot of technical details that I had to master, et cetera. But I want to go through this a lot more methodically than I may have in the past. So I've actually got a little slideshow set up. And one of the little tricks that I do on my keyboard here is, and anyone can do this with a PC. I don't know how you would do this with any kind of an Apple operating system. But on my PC, if I hit the Alt and the Tab key at the same time, it brings up a row of windows, little icons, actually. They're miniature windows showing me the other programs that are running. And if I hit Alt Tab and let my finger off the tab, it will switch to whatever window it happens to be on at that point. Now, if there's only two tabs open, that's fine. You're just switching back and forth. But if you've got a bunch of programs running, like right now, I have the Blog Talk Radio, and I also have the chat room, but that is another window in my browser. So I have to check that every now and then to you know, see what's going on, what they're all saying. I see Flying Dutchman there and M.I. Gray. Thank you for being around. I really appreciate it. And Jay Ferg is there. And who we have? Melinda. We have Melinda. I'm not sure I know Melinda. So I'm sure we'll get a dialogue going. But right now, the screen that I'm looking at is a chat window for, I guess it's called Rizon Chat, which is part of the Blog Talk Radio infrastructure. Okay, but now I'm going to press Alt-Tab and go back to my slides. And so now I'm looking at this big sort of a conglomeration photo of different aspects of communications. And the question is, do you have communications problems or problems communicating? Now, have you really stopped to think about the mind-numbing array of communications tools that are at your fingertips? And I want to try to drive that home by talking a little bit about just a few seconds of history. Prehistoric people, I guess I'll be politically correct, instead of prehistoric man, I'll say prehistoric people, we've uncovered carved stones on the sides of caves, etc. Maybe could be a million years old, who knows, but all these numbers are going to be rough approximations. Okay, so carved stone, we had these, you know, people who didn't speak, they didn't read and write, because all they could do was carve pictures into stone, and then other people would see it and they'd have some basic idea of what the person was trying to convey. But then, and let's say that this is about 6,000 years ago, we had smoke signals. You remember the TV shows, the Westerns, where the Indians would be sending smoke signals with their Indian blankets over, you know, a smoky fire? Well, those were smoke signals. And let's say that's roughly 6,000 years ago. Okay. Now, just 200 years ago, Samuel F.B. Morse invented the telegraph. And again, my years, I'm just using round numbers here. Then Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone about 150 years ago. And Guglielmo Marconi invented radio about 100 years ago. Television, 75 years. Cellular telephones, 40 years. Satellites, anywhere on the face of the earth communications, 30 years ago. Digital communications, 20 years ago. You get the point? The point is that this sophistication of tools is rapidly accelerating, and most of that has been achieved in a single century, 20th century. Now, we are the recipients of all of that foundation work. In fact, the system that's allowing you to listen to my voice right now is a pretty sophisticated system. Not as sophisticated as a lot of other systems, but nonetheless, in terms of technology, in terms of where we were 100 years ago, this is a fabulous system. And I have sitting in front of me a Tascam digital recorder, a DR100 Mark III, that I'm using the microphones, and that goes into the back of my computer, which is a small, well, I guess medium-sized gaming computer, which I use for video editing. And it's going out to you through the Blog Talk Radio. And just to make sure I'm still on the air, Marconi used Tesla's designs. Yes, I think you're right, Flying Dutchman. And, I don't know if Tesla invented radio as a communications mechanism. I know he did some really fascinating and still untapped inventing that. From the lore that I've heard. And see, now here's another example. I'm jumping around here, but, you know, I could say, Tesla had some of his best patents snapped up by the government, by the U.S. federal government, and they're now secret. And so, you know, who knows what they are doing with them? Well, I don't know that that's a fact. I've heard it, but does that mean it's a fact, that it's absolutely true? I didn't know Tesla personally. So from what I gather by reading about him, actually, on LinkedIn, one of my contacts is his granddaughter, I think. And I've exchanged a couple of messages with her way back. But in any case, Tesla was a great inventor. He really was. And in fact, most of his major work was stolen. But all of this is lore, L-O-R-E. It's things that I've picked up and synthesized in my own brain. So, you know, with fake news, how do you really understand what's true and what's not true? And you know, depending on the fuzziness of your mind, you know, I would say that some people, fortunately not me, and I think the people I'm talking to, would say, I want to know the concrete facts in the matter. All of that is something we can save for a different program. That is not something that we want to be covering tonight. What we want to cover tonight is good two-way communication, not an extended rant, not a monologue by either party. And we're talking about two people communicating. And so what does that mean? Well, that means giving and taking and giving and taking back and forth. Doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be like a metronome back and forth. It doesn't have to be like a tennis match back and forth. But what you need to do is you need to do two things, but fortunately, you don't need to do them simultaneously. In fact, you shouldn't do them simultaneously. One is you should listen. And that is something that I've preached for a long, long time, but that's more or less an axiom. So good two-way conversation consists of two mechanisms. One is a sender who is speaking or communicating. The other is a receiver who is listening or communicating by whatever mechanism. So it's a two-way conversation. It's not just somebody sitting there listening to another person. Now, I sometimes have been critiqued or criticized a little bit for liking Wikipedia. Oh, you can't trust Wikipedia. You can't trust Wikipedia. Actually, I don't trust them so much as I evaluate them every time I go on one of their pages. And I will say that I do find it a good source of organized information. Now, if it's controversial, if it's something that sounds like it's too good to be true or like it's fantastic, I would probably not believe it, but I would accept it as something that somebody put down on Wikipedia. So there is on Wikipedia an outline of communication. And it's a very detailed, long page. But essentially, from Wikipedia, communication is purposeful activity of exchanging information and meaning across space and time using various technical or natural means, whichever is available or preferred. And that is such a beautiful sentence because it's exactly what I'm talking about tonight. You know, exchanging information means going back and forth. And meaning, conveying the meaning of something is very, very important. Using various technical or natural means, speech and hearing, or satellites and satellite phones, whatever you'd like. There's technical or natural means, whichever is available or preferred. Now, the word available there calls to mind amateur radio in emergencies. And that is a very flexible and high performance method of communication, which can be utilized almost anywhere, almost anytime. And so that is a good medium of communication in a disaster or a large-scale emergency. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. But there's always a recipient for a message. And then, you know, at the very least, the sender wants to know that the message was received by the recipient. And then maybe if it gets beyond that, they want to know if the recipient understood the message. And that is critically important. Now, the receiver does not have to be present or aware of the sender's intent to communicate at the time of the communication. And think about that. So somebody writes a magazine article to communicate certain information, and 6 months later, you're in a waiting room somewhere and you happen to pick up the magazine and read it. And it really is important information for you at that instant. Well, you weren't aware of the sender sending it, but in fact, the sender did send it. The writer went through a whole process of writing his thoughts or her thoughts and submitting them to a publication, which then distributed that information probably a number of different ways, but the one piece that you're holding in your hands is a printed magazine. And you see and understand, see, read, and understand what the sender's intent was. Hopefully. That's good communication. Now, communication can occur across vast distances in time and space. Now, obviously, we get pictures from the Mars rovers. And so now we see what the surface of Mars looks like. Well, that's a communication across a vast distance, but it's not speaking to us. It's not really writing to us, although technically you could dissect it. In fact, I'm going to go to the chat room right now just to see. Let's see. Depends on who writes history. For non-biased information, I find them to be quite good. Okay. Yeah, that's good. I do see some biases in some of their material, but that's a subject for another story. Anyway, communication across vast distances. So, you know, it doesn't have to be written or spoken, but instead it's images, which are very rich. Now, how did those images get to us? Well, it's all through ones and zeros. And those, it's not even ones and zeros. It's electrical current, electrical, it's electricity being turned on and turned off. If it's turned on to a computer, it represents a one. If it's turned off, it represents a two. And so from that tiny little, you know, minuscule atomic level particle, we have pictures from Mars. It's amazing when you think about it. And here we are talking about the past century when, you know, just in the past 20 or so years, we've developed technology to land a rover on the moon so it can be commanded to drive around and send back video images. That's fabulous. Now, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about something very practical. Okay. The structure of a communications encounter. Now, I will, what's the jargon for this? I'll give a shout out to Dale Carnegie, long since passed on. But the spirit of Dale Carnegie lives through present day courses and books. And I went to Amazon, and I got a link here in these slides. And so I'm clicking on Amazon right now. And I'm looking at the author page for Dale Carnegie. And he has some absolute classics. One of them, and probably the best known, is How to Win Friends and Influence People. And another one is How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. And so he, in his time, which I believe was the early 20th century, very early 20th century, developed talks that he gave in New York City. And they were so popular that they just spread throughout the world. And his books have sold millions and millions of copies. I can tell you that the Dale Carnegie course that I took changed my life. It really did. It helped me in my human relations, which up until then were okay, but not great. And considering that I was representing a big institution as the public information officer, I needed to be able to have excellent communication skills, but people skills first, you know, understanding people and how they want to communicate, whether they know it or not. So what does that mean? Well, Dale Carnegie's eighth human relations principle is talk in terms of the other person's interests. Okay, so you want to listen to them and see what they're interested in. Okay. Now, from here on, we're going to be talking about selling someone and getting an order. Now, I know this is a big jump from communications, but think about it. We're talking about the structure of a communications encounter with two people, one being the salesperson and the other being the buyer. Okay, so what would Dale Carnegie suggest? Well, taking a few minutes to research your prospect and the organization's industry will enable you to better understand and meet their exact needs. And I can't tell you how much that exact needs means. I am driven crazy constantly by a lack of communication that I see in the general region where I'm living now. I won't, for those of you who don't know, good. The general region of the United States that I'm living in now, for some reason, has a big, when I say region, I don't mean multi-state. I mean, within maybe 100 miles. It just seems like they never give you the exact details you need. It's like they never read who, what, when, where, why, and how. And we're talking about websites. We're talking about Facebook pages. We're talking about newspapers. We're talking about flyers that people will post. They just assume that you know where it is. And believe me, that's true. That's what they do. They can post a sign on a door of a small business. The large, box stores and things, they have set hours. But, a small single owner shop somewhere will post a sign of their hours. 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., 5 days a week, closed Saturday and Sunday. Okay, great. That sounds pretty good. I know I have to get there between 9 and 5, so I show up at 4, and oh, by the way, they're closed. That happens around here. It really does. So, and they don't even put up a sign that says gone fishing, But in any case, in a sales communication encounter with someone, you're the salesperson, you're trying to sell this person something that your organization has, there needs to be an exchange of value. Okay, you need to get a sale, a commitment from that person to exchange their money for whatever it is you're selling. And that is what we call the old Dale Carnegie method. And it's probably used, but I don't see it as frequently as I'd like. Attention, interest, conviction, desire, and close. Those are the steps of selling something. And speaking of selling, we've got to go back to Blog Talk Radio right now. If I can find, there we are, and go back to the studio, and we're going to play a couple of advertisements to pay the bills.
As Prepper Broadcasting listeners, you already know that the more self-reliant people we have around, the better off we'll be in a disaster. That's why we started Prepper.org. The mission? Bring top survival, prepping, and homesteading experts under one roof to share their knowledge with as many Americans as possible. I want you to go to Prepper.org/PBN. We've got a free survival basics guide for you by the one and only Ron Foster. That's prepper.org/PBN. Prepper.org/PBN.
When disaster strikes and your GPS is useless, ancient navigation techniques will ensure your survival. New from Ulysses Press, Prepper's Survival Navigation. With this guide, you can easily travel through even the farthest, remotest places, utilizing tips from the United States Army and lifelong wilderness experts. You'll learn life-saving navigation techniques. This definitive guide to terrain navigation also teaches you essential survival skills like firecraft, water procurement, and shelter making. Prepper's Survival Navigation is essential to have on hand during any outdoor adventure, including the weekend family outing. On sale now. Find Prepper's Survival Navigation on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Prepper Broadcasting, or wherever fine books are sold.
Okay, we're back, and we're talking about the structure of a communications encounter, and the example that we're giving is a sales talk or a sales presentation. And so you want to get the prospect's attention, and how can you do that? By appealing to their interest. Okay, so they have an interest. Now the skill comes in convincing that person that what you have will solve their problem. You want to create a desire for that solution. And then when you see that there's desire, you close. You say, here's my order form. Please sign here. Now, I'm not teaching selling here. I'm teaching a communications encounter. This is the structure of an encounter. The right tool for the right job. I'm going to tell you, this will be a little bit of a personal history here, but I want to use my personal history as an illustration for the right tool, for the right job. In other words, matching your tools for whatever it is you're doing. You know, you wouldn't carve a diamond with a chisel. You know, you might use a micro chisel that happens to be a laser. I don't know. I don't know how to do it. But in any case, the right tool for the right job. Now, I started out my career. I mean, I did a lot of things before I really settled down and got into one track. So the journalism track was the one that got me started. And I was rolling along and I wanted to be hired as a photographer. But guess what? The local newspaper didn't hire summer intern photographers. They only hired summer intern reporters. And how did I know this? Because I had already been selling pictures to them in high school. Not only high school activities, but accidents, fires. You know, I used to chase fire engines. So what are the skills required there? Well, I had to master writing. And news writing is a particular style of writing. So even though I had, you know, pretty much gotten through high school learning how to write in English class, I still had to be a good news writer, somebody who could write a news article in the style that they wanted. Now, how do I go about writing it? Well, the way they do it, they don't take pads and pencils and say to their reporters, okay, just, you know, send the composing room a piece of paper with some scribbles on it. No, they want typewritten copy. So even though I learned how to, you know, I took a typing class, my mother, I wouldn't say forced me, but strongly suggested that I take typing in high school. And I did. Thank God she told me that. So, typewriter and writing skills for a cub reporter. That got me through. All right. Now, obviously, I have to develop my writing skills, my interviewing skills, etc. But those are the tools, the basic tools, typewriter and writing skills. Now, when I was a photojournalist, obviously, you got to learn how to use your equipment. But fast use of the equipment, fast composition, and not only that, knowing where to stand. You know, these are all things that I had to learn to communicate through pictures. Public information officer. Well, honestly, I had to do quite a bit of work on my interpersonal skills, interpersonal communication skills. But prior to that time, I had absolutely no experience in public speaking. And the public information officer provides information to the public. And sometimes the public is gathered in a large group. So I had to learn public speaking skills. I went from that to actually magazine article writing and public relations work. But let's skip ahead to marketing consultant. One of the big aspects of working as a marketing consultant is being able to produce graphic works like ads and brochures and sell sheets and other things, not to mention annual reports, which I did a few of for a couple of clients. So finding and working with graphic designers was a communication skill, a very high level, sophisticated communication skill. We're not talking about reading and writing here. We're talking about communicating to make a product which would convey information to a customer. Now, as a management consultant, years later, I had to learn problem solving combined with written and spoken words. And how do you communicate that? Well, it happened to be at that time, PowerPoint slides were the in thing. That was the brand new Microsoft program for presenting information. Of course, back then we didn't have data projectors. We had transparencies that were printed out on a computer printer and put on an overhead projector. Now, there were other things you could do, but that's essentially the technology of the day. Then I became a publisher, and I had to develop technical skills to publish information in an electronic format. And not too many years ago, I started into documentary video, and I became a producer. That involved a whole new set of skills, including video editing. And now, just, I don't know, it's been maybe 3 or 4 months, I'm a podcaster, and I flubbed it. The last time I was on, I missed a caller, and I've got somebody here, but I think this person is just calling in to listen. So, and I see the button I'm supposed to press, but I pressed it a little while ago. Hello, oh, yeah. Caller, are you there?
Yes.
Is this Jay Fergie?
It is. You did it again.
Okay. I'm muting you.
Okay.
You're just listening. You're listening to the show on the line.
I am, very attentively.
Thank you. This is, you're very kind to be a listener, and I appreciate it. Okay. I'm going to go back to my program.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we're back to the PowerPoint slides here. Podcaster, new skills, like I just learned today, using a YouTube video to learn these new skills to better communicate with my listeners. It is a very complex world we're living in. Now, I have in front of me a radio requirements worksheet. So let's say you're part of an organization and you need to find a means of radio communications. Well, how do you go about doing it? Well, you fill out one of these forms and you send it to the purchasing department, and they will, you know, approve it, hopefully, and get your stuff. All right. That is a standardized form of communication. You're putting down specific required information. It's a standardization. Now, just about all states have what's called a disaster plan or emergency planning, et cetera, et cetera. And within those disaster plans, they have very clear outlines of what each emergency support function needs to do. And I think there's about 15 of them. But ESF2, and that shows you how important communications is. ESF2 is number two on the list. So that's very important. Now, excuse me. The introduction, purpose, concept of operations, actions, response, recovery, mitigation, and then responsibilities. And I'm only halfway through the document. So this is an Annex 2 to the South Carolina Emergency Management Division Emergency Plan for South Carolina. And everybody, each state has one. And probably many cities do too. You know, when I was a public information officer, I used to be very friendly with the security assistant chief. And I'd sit in his office and I'd look at, while he's on the phone, I'd look at his wall of binders. And he had a binder for every single contingency, which is great. That's planning. Okay, so standardization is one aspect of communication. Standardizing on forms, formats, etc. And maybe you need that. Maybe you need to have to from subject date fields in your note, in your memos. You know, well, that's pretty standard. So that would be a standardization aspect. Now, symbology. And communicating effectively with symbology. Now, that opens up a whole can of worms. Because what we're doing is we're straying into this minefield of jargon. Okay? And I am looking right now. I confess, I was a flight instructor for a while. And that's part of the reason why I got my job down in Miami, where I was public information officer for Miami International Airport. But I was a flight instructor. And if I'm looking right now at a sectional chart, what would they call it? It's the key to all of the illustrations on a sectional chart map for aviation. And you've got a bunch of symbols on here. You have to know how an airport is represented on that map graphically. Okay, then there's a bunch of other graphics, additional airport information. When you get to a fairly large airport, there's a box there with airport data. And that, believe me, is jargon to the nth degree. There's all kinds of frequencies and ATIS and CT and FSS and NOSVFR and you go on and on. UNICOM. All right. Just all kinds of acronyms and different types of communications and navigation mechanisms. Okay. There's a lot more to this, but I'm just talking, this is kind of an introduction to the whole topic of jargon, you know, symbology on an aviation map. I mean, somebody could be a land navigator and know topographical maps like the back of their hand and know how the earth is shaped based on some of the lines in that topographic map. They could be an expert on that. And then when they're faced with reading a map, they have no idea what's on that map. Why? Because they don't know the specific jargon and symbology of that. And I'll give you a good example. Here is, again, from Wikipedia, they do have a nice section on jargon. Jargon is the technical terminology or characteristic idiom of a special activity or group. Now, let's just take amateur radio. I know about amateur radio, you're saying to yourself, some of you. Oh, yeah, I know about it. Okay. Well, amateur radio has a number of special interest groups. Now, what do we call that for short? We call that a SIG. But if you're not fully aware of all the terminology, I mean, that's a standard kind of a phrase, SIG. It's really an acronym, SIG, for special interest group. But now, here's where you got to be a ham to understand this jargon. Okay, amateur radio special interest groups include CW, AM, SSB, FM, HF, VHF, UHF, microwave, contesting, DXing, public service, ARES, ARES, races, RACES, repeaters, education, fox hunting, RTTY, packet, APRS, satellite, SDR, DSTAR, P25, DMR, and finally NXDN. And somewhere in there where there should have been a, well, I guess data in general. Data transmissions, but in any case. So I'm not going to go through all those. You don't want me to. You just, you know, click off and go someplace else. But I'll mention a few here. What is RTTY? Well, RTTY stands for radio teletype. And yes, there are still people that have these big clunky machines that are rattling around and that print out on yellow paper a message, just like the old days. The old days being maybe 40s, 30s, 40s, 50s. Okay. APRS. What is APRS? Well, that's amateur packet reporting system. So you could take a GPS and hook it up to certain types of radios and transmit a signal that will allow someone on the other end with software and mapping to be able to plot your location in real time, or just about real time. Okay. DMR. What is DMR? Well, that's digital mobile radio. And that's a whole other the person who provided the information in this paragraph, amateur radio special interest groups, wrote a excellent primer on digital mobile radio. And let's see if I can get to that here. I believe it is the Amateur Radio Guide to Digital Mobile Radio. I could try looking that up, but if you're really, really interested, I'm on Facebook. You know, I have a personal page, but we also have a page for the All Hazards Communications Preparedness. So check that out and send me any kind of questions that you have. And if you want a copy of that manual, I'll point you in the right direction. But in any case, he's got this fabulous primer on digital mobile radio. And so that's where that information came from. Now that's, there's jargon here. This is what jargon is. HF, high frequency, FM, AM, FM, you have that on your radio. Everybody knows that, almost everybody. All right. Now we get a little more sophisticated. Codes and signals. And I really enjoy codes and signals, but apparently FEMA does not. Now, everybody knows FEMA. That's the big bad Federal Emergency Management Agency. And depending on your point of view, they're either the devil or the savior, one or the other. And I'm not convinced of either extreme, but in any case, there is an article, a very good one, that kind of gives the history. Well, let me read the title of it. Police 10 Codes versus Plain Language, The History and Ongoing Debate. 10 codes have been replaced bit by bit for 10 years, but reform is slow. So why are departments holding on? And it goes on to talk about this, the history and the current debate. And really, it's more than a debate. It's FEMA emphasizing the use of plain language. So instead of saying, what's your 1020? Someone will say, instead, what's your location? Now, why do you suppose we had 10 codes in the first place? Well, that's because radios were staticky and they were somewhat unreliable. And so you had to make things short. And in the beginning, it was called a brevity code. And that's technically what it is, a brevity code for shortness and quick understanding. But 10 codes are something we've kind of, over the years grown up with. We've heard it on radio and television and CB radio and amateur radio. And well, I don't think amateur radio really uses it, but in any case, amateur radio has its own set of codes. It's a topic for another show. But I did want to bring that up because FEMA is, of course, part of the federal government. And what the Department of Homeland Security is doing is it is pushing a standardization of radio frequencies and techniques, including plain language. Because if some police department in some small town has come up with their own little set of 10 codes, the cop in the car might use that 10 code when he's or she is trying to refer to a specific set of information that they're communicating to somebody else who they never communicate with. And that is called, that is the holy grail of interoperability. And again, that's a very broad subject. But digital mobile radio has enabled electronic communication by voice through radio means to be crystal clear until it's gone. In other words, you either have crystal clear communications or you don't have crystal clear communications because you don't hear anything. There might be a tiny little gap in between those two extremes, but essentially digital mobile radio means you're talking and they're hearing you almost exactly the way you're speaking because it's sent digitally. Okay? So because of all this interoperability throughout, you know, the United States, police, fire, emergency services, EMS, civil defense, if there are any anymore, emergency management agencies, you know, all of these, even the hospitals, okay? Now you've got hospitals tied into all this. In fact, in South Carolina, we have a repeater system, a VHF-UHF repeater system called SC Heart, and it's the hospital emergency network. Okay, so really it's just amateur radio repeaters that have been set up on top of, well, in the case of the hospital where is local to me, it's on the roof. Okay, we have an actual building, a small, you know, room built on the roof. Now, what was that originally? I think it was storage or something, but the local amateur radio club has turned that into a communications building, and that during storms and other emergencies, they will locate themselves there physically on top of the hospital, taking the stairway or the elevator if they happen to have electricity, and going. Now, hospitals like our local hospital, just about every hospital probably today, has backup power. Okay, but even then, you know, there are other ways, batteries, you know, 12-volt batteries. In fact, my expensive $1,000, you know, radio, amateur radio, HF radio that I bought with a beautiful color LCD screen and touch screen capability, that's you could power that with a 12-volt car battery. Yes. So it doesn't, you don't plug it into the wall. You know, it has two terminals on the back. One's red and one's black. And you connect that to a DC power source, 12 volts. Now, it has to be pretty capable. That 12-volt source is actually a minimum draw of 22 amps. And I have a 32-amp power supply. But again, that's jargon. And unless you know what I'm talking about, you don't know what I'm talking about. So that brings us to the end of my slideshow here, which, you know, could have been a lot longer and has been longer in other situations. But that's it for tonight. And I hope that I don't even hope that you've learned something. I hope that you've become aware of the complexity of human communication today. It is absolutely phenomenal, the tools that we have to communicate. Do we send an email? Do we send a text message via cell phone? How do we do it? You know, people have preferences. I happen to like emails because I can succinctly, and we didn't even talk about the cardinal rule of communication, which is the 5 C's. How did I miss that? I got to go back to that. Let me see. Hold on. I'm looking through the slides here. Well, I almost know them by heart. It's It is clear, correct. My mind is a blank. It's five C's. It's clear, correct, concise, complete, and convincing. I believe that's the five C's. In any case, that's a checklist for, you know, writing or speaking or making a presentation, and to make sure that what you're saying is clear, it's concise, it's complete, it's correct, and convincing, not necessarily in that order. But those are the five C's of communication. So where are we at here? Well, we're at the end of one show in a series of shows. And if you liked what you heard tonight, I was saying I don't think I can hope to have taught you anything. Not that, you know, you were here for a lesson. But what I hope I did tonight was raise awareness of the complexity of communication and the thought that should go into communicating with other human beings. And I left off with email and texting and what have you, and I've found that I can send 50 different emails to somebody, and yet they will respond and I don't get any answers, but they will respond immediately to a text message. Now, do they even look at their email? I don't know. I don't know. But that person prefers a text message. Now, what I'm telling you is probably something that you've heard many times. When I write an email, I tend to not write paragraphs. I tend to write individual sentences. Why? Because when you look at an email, you don't want to open up this giant email with, you know, reams of text in it, they're all bunched together. And the minute you see a long paragraph, I would think most people, they kind of back up and say, well, maybe I'll get to this another time, you know. So a little technique that I've developed is I just write individual sentences and I put, you know, like a paragraph space in between each sentence. And so I hope that that's a little more effective. I happen to like that. Some other people don't respond to my emails, and yet I can pick up the phone and talk to them. Or I can go, better still, I can go on Facebook and instantly communicate with them whenever I want. So, I mean, we just have this incredible plexity, this fabric it's got so many threads running through it of communication. So I'm hoping that tonight you have become aware of some of the aspects of that, and I hope you'll listen next week because we'll have an exciting topic, and I can't tell you exactly what it will be, but when I get motivated like I did this week, here it is. So thank you all for listening, and come back next week, same station, same time, and we'll go at it again. Thank you.
This message is transmitted at the request of the United States Office of Civil Defense.
Page 251-2110.
Message follows. Tango 6-3 Delta Yankee.
Yeah, I got a message.
Green Admiral of the IP, bomb line checklist. Pilot center of the OCI and keep it centered.
Roger, centering SCI.
Roger, 10 seconds to go.
Radio Österreich International.